Remembering the great Blackjack Mulligan, this is the PW Torch Livecast for Friday, April the 8th, 2016. Yes, I had to pause and think about it for a second. I'm Bruce Mitchell, senior columnist for the Pro Wrestling Torch for PWTorch.com, and welcome to Friday's livecast. We'll be joined momentarily by our co-host and WrestleMania attendee, Travis Bryant. Travis, you recovered from your trip yet?
For the most part. What's happening, Bruce? Livecast audience, what up?
So, you know, you and I haven't talked about WrestleMania since you went.
We have not.
We have not. And, boy, six hours and 15 minutes. That was, I don't know. I was tired sitting at home. How did you take all that? How was the show? How was the experience?
The show was fine. As far as the length of the show, For real, you didn't notice until that final match. For whatever reason, whether it was the quality of the match or the plotting nature of the match, especially early. But that was the first time where in the entire, at that point, 4 or 5 hours that I had been there, where I just kind of, put my hand on my chin and, on my knee, elbow on my knee, and was like, I'm ready to go. I was like, all right, let's just do. And no, I take that back, because when The Rock came out and did all that stuff, we're looking around like, is this going to be a 6-minute main event? Like, we had no idea what was going on as far as the.
We did at home, yeah.
The time, how long they were going. And then someone behind us or in front of us or something said, yeah, they're going, they got cable, they told cable providers they're going to go 20 minutes over. But then they went like 32 minutes over past the hour, I think. I don't remember exactly, but it wasn't awesome. At least that final like hour of the show, especially the match, the main event, was just like, all right, let's get this over with. Because you knew and it was a parking lot, literally, trying to get out. It took us probably an hour just to, finally go, 12 miles an hour. It was just stop, it was a mess trying to get out. But all in all, a decent experience. I don't know where people were. I didn't have any experience waiting out in line for hours and passing out due to dehydration or heat exhaustion or anything. It was 93 degrees. It was a pretty warm day, but I don't know what people would have been doing beforehand to have passed out from heat exhaustion if you're just standing in low 90s weather. It was chaos getting in. Once we were in, the lines to the concessions were absurd, and to the not the bathrooms, the line, the food lines were ridiculous, and the stadium isn't exact. It's kind of weirdly designed. Like once you're in on the lower, because we were on the lower level, the first level, not the floor, so you kind of have to go down some steps, and it was just kind of weirdly designed. Like you can get lost in this place, or if you're running from somewhere, if this is like a horror movie. Like you could easily run down like a dead end hallway, and then get eaten by a monster or whatever. But yeah. But all in all, a decent experience at AT&T Stadium.
Yeah, let me ask you about the main event. Watching at home, it seemed like what you expected, where the majority of the fans didn't like Roman Reigns, but when he won the match, I couldn't tell whether it was audio tricks or just the natural reaction. How did fans take at that moment when the three count came and Roman Reigns was the WWE champion? Did that change, or
for maybe 2.5 seconds? I remember WrestleMania 18. My buddy Damon's over, and Hogan does what he did, right? So the entire match, he's you can see in Rock's face, he's like, "What the hell's going on?" But then Rock hits the people's elbow and pins them, and they pop. And my buddy Damon was pissed. He's yelling at the TV, calling the audience weak. You're weak. Because you booed the guy for 20 minutes, and then now he wins.
Right.
Now you're happy. It wasn't that at all. Yay, title change, new champion, but more matches over. Let's get the hell out of here.
Because
it was a slog. That match was not exciting.
Right.
And from the beginning, it was just with Stephanie coming out, doing that garbage that she did. You know, at first, I didn't know who it was. I'm like, is that Roman Reigns with the crazy hair? Because it wasn't Triple H. All I saw was dark, poofy hair behind the mask. So for a split second, I actually thought it was Roman Reigns doing like a getting a weird, you know, WrestleMania entrance.
I was worried about the Dalmatians in the area, but I know what you mean. Or it just remind me of something you see that she reminded me of something you see at an amusement park, a show for kids at the amusement park. I mean, I was just wow.
Right. But, right, yeah. With the snarls and the scowls and the you're nothing. It was just, it was more over the top than normal, which is usually, you know, not pleasant to watch and listen to. And it was even worse than that. So, not a fun final half hour of that show, just because it just was boring and not very exciting.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does. And now I need to do some much.
And then the first thing I see when the memes start, you know, the internet goes crazy. One of the first memes I see is a guy takes a picture of his TV as he's pointing the remote at it, and you see the volume bar way up. And it says, either I went deaf in one ear, or WWE is screwing with the sound. It's doing, you know, dulling the sound. And I still haven't seen it, Mania on TV, but there was a man. The boos when he first came out, Bruce, were, I'm not sure. Well, I know I haven't because I've never been in a building with 100,000 people, but I've never heard anything like that as far as the boom of the boos.
Yeah. Wow, man.
Yeah. I've been in that Astrodome, the Superdome in New Orleans, in New York or New Jersey at MetLife. It's open air, but still, this was massive. And it was, I still don't know who got the biggest pop, either Austin, Rock, or Cena. You could argue either one, and those were possibly some of the loudest cheers I've ever been a part of and heard personally.
Was there any segment? How could I say this? What percentage of the audience was anti Reigns versus pro Reigns?
Let's say 85% anti Reigns.
So 85-15. What about John Cena?
Yeah. The other way.
Wow.
85% were. I mean, when he came out, it was pretty ridiculous the way people reacted. It was Austin-esque from earlier.
Yeah.
And,
so
and
what
it was different types of pops. The Austin one came because you're like, who's next? Who's coming out? And then boom, Cena came out in the midst of, you know, Rock catching a beating. So it was a different reaction. It was, you know, murmur, yay, instead of almost, not silent, but, you know, kind of just, oh, there's Foley, oh, there's Michael, yay, we're clapping. But when Austin came out, it was, I think that might have been it. I would understand people saying Rock or Cena got a bigger one, but, pause. But I think Austin had the biggest, loudest reaction, face reaction.
What was the best thing about WrestleMania for you?
The show?
The show first, yeah.
Lesnar, Ambrose. That was the match I got the most into, like standing up and yelling at Trey. And, you know, when he hit him with the ball shot, because I saw it coming, probably everybody did. Like, hit him in the nuts. And then he hits him, and I'm like, yeah. And I'm, you know, yelling at, you know, everybody is pro Lesnar, pretty much. Or not pro Lesnar, or they weren't anti Dean. They were just pro Lesnar. I guess that's the way of saying it. But I was all the way being anti Brock that entire, 15 minutes or so. So for me personally, that even though that wasn't a good match, let alone a great match, I don't think it was a good match. I was the most into it, like emotionally and reacting viscerally to the moves and to stuff. So I'd say that one.
Okay. How was Ambrose taken, as a top level star or a guy to get fed to Brock Lesnar, or somewhere in the between?
I think it's both. He's a top level guy that's going to get fed to Brock Lesnar.
Okay. Well, that makes some sense. What was the dullest thing about the show?
It's not fair to say like the Usos or anything like that, because that just wasn't counted on to be, it was at the, not even on the show. So it's tough to say that was. So the main show dullest. Oh, well, when I went to go finally go to the bathroom was the Battle Royal. I didn't care. I watched, on the monitors, as I walked through the arena, and it was good. I was glad. I was like, Tatanka's in this thing. Thank goodness. I had to pace because what a god awful battle royal that was. Again, from what I saw, I didn't see it start to finish, but in full context. But what I saw was just horrible.
How did people take to Shane McMahon and Undertaker? Because I thought there was parts of that match were really not very good. And then,
yeah, no one cared. They were into the match. It didn't matter.
They were into the match. Okay, cool.
They were into it completely. Everybody. I mean, for the most part.
Yeah. What about his dive off the top?
Again, it was one of those things that you saw coming, a minute before it happened. So the excitement, the murmurs, the where's he going? Is he going to the top? Is he going to do it? Is Undertaker on a counter? Is he going to? So the excitement, that undercurrent, started to build. I have a really cool photo grid that I posted of his ascent. So a quarter of the way up, halfway up, three quarters of the way up, all the way up. I have this nice four grid picture of him climbing the thing, and everybody knew what was coming, and everybody braced for it and went nuts when it happened.
The women's match, how was the reaction to Charlotte winning instead of Sasha Banks?
Charlotte, she got a really good reaction. As far, she got the correct reaction.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Even
I
from that smart, super smarty pants fan, which was weird because they were like schizophrenic the entire weekend. They booed her at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
When they showed her on camera, which
right.
And then she had a salty look on her face, like, no, be glad this is where your money is in those booze, Charlotte. Like, are you kidding? Like, just because she had to look like, come on, it's the Hall of Fame. No, you're a jerk, and they don't care what the context is. You're a jerk. So
she got real heel heat at the Hall of Fame. She was like the one. She was like the one who, like, they react to her like she's a heel. It's not we hate you, go away. It's kill her.
No, you're a jerk, and you treat my favorite ladies terribly, and your dad always cheats for you, and the good heat. Then on Sunday at the show live, again, tremendous reaction. Just, really, deep, sustained boos the entire intro, in her entire entrance, and the match itself. And then Raw, they did what they did on Raw. They kind of hijacked the thing. They sang Bailey's song. It was weird. I think it was more her reaction than I me getting on the fans, calling them schizophrenic now that I actually talk it through a little bit. I think it again came down to her handling it not in the best way. At least not handling her reaction. It's her initial reaction, just you got to power through that or improvise or something. She just stuck to the script, I guess.
Right. Yeah. and there's definitely something to, if you're talking about Monday night, yeah, there's definitely something to that, because if you give the crowd the idea that they can take some of the show, it gets worse if you you've got to do something else besides that.
What the hell? Speaking of the crowd taking the show, what in the frig was that at the beginning of the show that they did? Like that disclaimer they did, like, hey, this is the night after. It was horrible. And yeah, I haven't heard from people in the building. I probably should ask Rich. He was there. But I bet they did something beforehand to set something, had either Eden Styles
I don't think so. I mean, and that definitely sounds like something. That sounds like Vince McMahon trying to explain to some corporate advertiser, some corporate partner, why people are acting the way they were. But
no,
people are listening for it a lot more.
Before the show, I'm thinking maybe as they're like warming up, like, you know, the crowd are taping something beforehand. They're like, hey, we know you're a raucous crowd and blah, blah, blah. Like, just do your show. Don't give them any more attention than they're already going to put on themselves. And
yeah,
it almost seemed like the crowd heard what the announcer said at the beginning and was like, they're talking about us. So let's, like, no one's ever going to be that night after Raw in New Jersey, New Jersey crowd from 3 years ago, where the Fandango stuff took off. And but everybody now wants to be that instead of just being it or not. They're like, oh, let's be cute. And it just seems forced and kind of phony in some places.
Yeah, I agree. No, it was I've got no problem with people heckling during bad stuff. But when you're heckling during everything, or if you're hijacking the show during everything, or something that has a chance to be if it has a chance to be decent, you give it a chance, and there are parts of that show with the crowd. And I normally am not against the crowd because they paid their money, and it's the job of the wrestlers and the promotion to draw them into the story. And if they don't, that's on them. But this was kind of like, particularly the ceremony with Charlotte and Sasha Banks and Natalya, and the rest of the women, I just thought, give it a chance. I mean, this wasn't going to suck, I didn't think, and, like, they didn't.
Look, that crowd lost all credibility when they started chanting Byron Saxon's name. Like, You know what? We all know you're just doing it to entertain yourself. That's obvious, but
it's
too much.
Right, yeah, you're right.
Byron Saxon has not earned those chants. Stop it.
Okay, when everyone was leaving the stadium Sunday night, were they happy they were there? Was it like, we saw WrestleMania, this was a great show?
I've left shows, Unforgiven 03, I remember specifically, where it just was Triple H Goldberg got beat Triple H for a world title in this. Remember, he should have won it in the Hell in the Elimination Chamber the month before, and they jumped him and beat him down. And it was just this anticlimactic match and finish on top of a show that wasn't a good show in the first 2.5 hours. So people were pissed, like, and grumbling, and, and this was like a Hershey, PA crowd. And that it wasn't even in Philly or anything. People were happy. People were, even about the stuff they didn't like, maybe Roman Reigns and stuff, there was no regret in anyone's voices or faces or body language that I saw.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
If anything, were upset at the fact that it was, almost midnight Central or whatever, or, 11:30 Central when we got the hell out of it.
Yeah.
If anything, that's what people were complaining about.
So that tells you something about next year, them returning. They'll be back, a lot of them, I would definitely imagine. What else was I going to ask you? So talk about, because I haven't talked to you about, did you meet any Torch folks? Did you meet anybody? How did all that go?
Yeah, we did a bit of a meetup at the Kung Fu Saloon in Dallas proper. Plenty of folks showed up, probably 24 throughout the 6 or so hours that we were there. Our normal crew, and there is like some of their crew, like Rich, we know, but he brought three of his buddies from Pittsburgh. Frankie Wiseman, who we know on, who me and Dre know, who's a fan of the East Coast cast that we met, like, on Instagram, we communicate with on Instagram. Another guy, I don't remember. Oh, John Filipovich was at the tailgate.
Cool.
He told me to tell you hi.
Awesome, thank you. Yeah.
The tailgate.
He, of course, is the he was the director producer of Barbed Wire City, the documentary yes. about DCW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he knew. It was one of those moments where it's like, hey, do you listen to the show? And he's like, and I had to kind of piece it together without going, oh, that's right, that's who you are.
And you know, come to think of it, you met him because we went to the
totally.
We went to the premiere. Yeah,
I knew. I'm like, I should know who this guy is. He clearly knows me, and right. just a lot of that in like 4 or 5 seconds running through your head as you're nodding, like, oh yeah, good to see you. You're having fun, and then it clicks. Oh, that's right. And you just hope that it doesn't show on your face that you're finally figuring out who a guy is. But we, a lot of, going back to the people standing online, I wasn't trying to get there for any of those pre-show matches. I wanted to miss all of that. So we tailgated until about 4:30, 5 o'clock. And the tailgate, shout out to Nick Duke, who put together a fantastic tailgate. He had 4 dozen Jello shots, over 100 beers, 5 bottles of liquor, 800 hamburgers. It was ridiculous. So we were just fired up before we even got into the place. So walking around, like standing in line, it's not exactly like the worst when you're, you know, on the moon.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So, think you'll go back next year?
I'm not going to Orlando.
No, oh, okay.
I have no – yeah, no. Florida, please. Miami, sure, but Orlando, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But that said, I'll probably talked to – most of my friends will probably go, and I'll go, okay, well, fine.
Cool. All right. Well, I was definitely interested in that. I wanted to hear because what you see – I think of WrestleMania a lot as a television event, but the live reactions and then, you know, is this being produced or is this not being produced and how people are and all that. What do you think of this concept of Roman Reigns as – a champion who fights everybody, and if he's fighting AJ Styles, then he's a little bit heelish. If he's fighting, Bray Wyatt, then he's supposed to be the favorite.
I don't know. Whatever, Roman. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really care as far as like that goes.
Oh, okay. That may be your answer. Yeah. That may be your answer about how that works. So, although WrestleMania as far as finishes went the way I thought it would go, and I don't see them backing off Roman Reigns anytime soon. So, and that'll be particularly if he's second in merchandise sales to John Cena. I think that's
There were I saw a kid in two or three rows in front of us with. It looks like the cheapest piece of crap ever, but he was wearing his folks paid probably $20-$30 for it, but a Roman Reigns vest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just like the material. It's like the opposite of Roman Reigns' vest, which looks like good, like thick leather, rubber, whatever. This was just some flimsy kind of mesh-looking stuff. But they had it. A lot of people were wearing, and not just kids. There were a decent amount of adult men wearing Roman Reigns stuff.
Okay. What's the coolest piece of merchandise that they sold?
That they sold. I wasn't looking for merch, so I
or a T-shirt. What's the coolest T-shirt you saw?
Well, the light blue cartoon New Day shirt was everywhere. Like four guys at our tailgate had. I mean, we had our New Day stuff, but like I got that New Day, the Run DMC New Day shirt and the track jacket and the sweatsuit and everything. Well, I'm not going to wear the sweatsuit, but the shirt, I'd wear that out. I wouldn't wear that light blue piece of crap out anywhere. Like, ugh. Like I had a hard time because on WWE Shop there was buy one get one free. So I got my New Day Run DMC shirt And I had a scour. I'm like, okay, let's start with the people I like. I like Dean Ambrose. Nope, not going to wear any of that. Brock Lesnar. Well, I like the Suplex City one, but unless I get it in Philadelphia, it's going to be a generic one.
Right.
Everyone there. It's just stuff that I'm not going to wear that. So I got a Samoa Joe one because it was just understated and it just says, you know, Samoa Joe, California, something. Not a ton to it. But I think the New Day cartoon unicorn one was by far the most popular shirt. Coolest? I couldn't tell you.
Okay, what was the most ridiculous fan you saw, or group of fans? What was where you just shook your head? What was maybe going to wrestling is different at WrestleMania, but when I go to wrestling, there's always somebody.
Well, it's weird because I'm into like cool T-shirts, right? And so when I went to the Black Podcasters event at the comic book shop 3 weeks ago, I wore my Soul Glow T-shirt, which is the Jerry Curl product from Coming to America. When I wear that, Bruce, I get so much attention. But when you're at a comic, when a guy next to you is in a complete cyborg cosplay outfit, you know, with boots and like everything, laser eyeball and the whole deal, and everybody's in some kind of Mega Man or friggin' Avengers thing, it's like you get, oh, cool shirt, and then they go about their business. Not like if you just walk into a grocery store and you're wearing it, and, oh, that's such an awesome shirt, where'd you get it? And everybody wants to talk to you and be your friend. Same at wrestling. We were in full-on New Day tracksuits with the shirts and the whole deal. And, sure, we got some attention, but there's also a full, like we've been to wrestling shows a million times, full Undertaker, Hogan, Ric Flair with the white blonde wig, a host of those guys. One of the coolest were Dudleys in the full black and white, gray and white and black camo outfits and the glasses. But the most ridiculous would probably be my buddy Cam, who, I don't know, he has 100 pictures of him picking people up. It started with on the walk there when he picked Dre up.
What?
Like putting people in the torture rack, Bruce. There was a woman, Hogan. He has a picture of her on his shoulders in a torture rack. A bunch of other people in a torture rack. A little kid, he's just picking him up. He's like, yes, I body slam children for Instagram likes. And so he was pretty ridiculous because he's, you know, Cam, Mr. Social Butterfly, got to interact with everybody. But at a wrestling show, it's tough. What was the most ridiculous thing?
Wow. All right. So appreciate that on-site report. Cool. Mm-hmm. Sounds like y'all had a great time.
It was a blast. And yeah, that was just Mania Day. I mean, there was 3 days leading up to that that was just full of debauchery and lots of chemicals being ingested. So.
Okay. It's pro wrestling. All right. Let's go to Brian from Phoenix. I'm sure you're shocked at what Travis just said.
Nothing. First of all, good afternoon. Nothing that Travis says shocks me.
Yeah, it's probably been listening to us for 5, 6, 7 years. Who knows?
Yeah,
you know. So yeah.
That's unfortunate. Yeah. No.
Well, my question really quick is that I went back and watched the NXT Dallas Takeover show, and specifically I rewatched the Baron Corbin Austin Aries match. And a couple times in that match, Tom Phillips and Corey Graves both referred to Austin Aries as a pit bull, like our pit bull-like qualities that he has. So my question for you, Trav, and for you, Bruce, is that you think is that, you know, again, the size difference was very pronounced, and they did mention it, you know, kind of briefly, they did mention that part about the size difference. It did look like Jack and the Beanstalk-ish kind of thing. But do you think that's kind of maybe a more, it's a good nickname, I guess, but maybe not the greatest nickname. So I just want to get your opinion on Austin Aries being called like Pitbull or having like Pitbull-like tendencies. Because remember,
he's not a Pitbull. That's not his gimmick. It was weird. He's not a Pitbull. I don't think of him as this relentless. I don't think of him as a Pitbull. I think that's a wrong.
What was that nickname they tried to hang on AJ Styles for being small too? There was one similar to that.
That was it. It was a pit bull.
Oh, they tried to say he was a pit bull.
Bulldog,
too?
Pit bull, something.
Bulldog,
yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't agree with that either. Just because you're small doesn't make you a pit bull. There's a certain you know, Rick Steiner was a pit bull.
Right.
You know, Buzz Sawyer, to go way back, the Mad Dog. It's like there's a quality of the personality that has to be there. And Austin Aries wrestles too well or too precisely. He doesn't overwhelm people. It's not, you know, it's not a pit bull chewing on your entrails. It's you know, he's a really good wrestler that's small. That's different.
Yep. The last time WWE used that nickname was for Kid Cash and Jamie Noble. They came out and wearing dog chains and everything.
Yeah.
And of course,
Pit Bulls 2.0 or some crap.
And that was terrible because they aren't pit bulls. Maybe Jamie Noble a little bit. I'm sure
he could gimmick, you know, he could be that. But they're, no. I don't like that.
Hey, last thing I'll ask Trav, you and Bruce about this, and I'll hang on. I hope you both have a real good weekend, is that there's two nicknames that I really don't like, and I'm kind of 50-50 of which one I don't, or like I guess halfway about which one I like. I dislike the worst. But one is Vanilla Midget, and the other one is Spot Bunny. So I want to see Trav and Bruce, what are your opinion is, which one do you think is the worst nickname? I don't like either one of them, but again, it's Spot Monkey or Vanilla Midget. And again, hope you have a good weekend. Talk to you both later. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian. I don't think those are nicknames. They're just kind of derogatory terms for, you know, that you would call a wrestler in a certain situation.
Well, I think that they're both names that big wrestlers use to describe smaller wrestlers who do more, and you know, it's who do more in the ring. And you know, Vanilla Midget's the famous Kevin Nash term for the late Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko and those guys. And it's it's dismissive. It kind of takes somebody. It takes something that's three dimensions and turns it into two dimensions. I don't like that either. And I've seen people that I thought were good wrestlers who, you know, had a whole style in ring and had their pacing right and everything, and did spots too, be called spot monkeys. If it's someone that doesn't sell and just does one spot after another, it's there. But I don't know. There's a lot. I mean, wrestling has its own language, but there's certain parts of the language I think are like presumptuous or not very precise, and I try to avoid using them. They get cliched, and it's I'm not a fan of either one of those. And it seems the first one seems to have dropped off into history, and then the second one kind of too. I mean, I think that I think it's been replaced by getting your spots in.
It's gone because more people than are not are are more people than 15 years ago, like when I was, I trained for a few years to wrestle, are spot monkeys. Even your
that's the point. Yeah,
bigger, more muscular and taller guys are doing all kinds of crap.
Yeah, that's definitely a point. There's no, you know, that's there. Let's go to our friend Darrell from Georgia.
How you doing, Bruce? How you doing, Trav?
What up?
Okay. Now I want to ask y'all, where are you, Bruce? Because I asked Trav them on the East Coast cast. I want to ask you how you feel about this. I feel like stories need to become more used in today's wrestling. I think they need to stop using stories to help get people over or help you hate someone, like someone, or make the feud feel serious. And don't you think today that they could use more stories to help people get over, like Roman Reigns or AJ Styles, like the feud they got on? Because that promo that they kicked on Thursday, that was so scripted that it made both promos seem bad because they scripted it so much, and then they don't follow up with any story to make you get excited about the two of them clashing with each other.
Yeah, you know, I think I think the problem is not that they're not using stories. They always use stories. It's just whether the stories are effectively told or make any sense or halfway there or match up the right people. I mean, I think that and take you on a ride with peaks and valleys and finally something, you know, finally a resolution. I think that's the problem. I don't think that I think they're trying to do stories. I think that some of them are better than others. Travis.
Yeah, they're just not good stories. Like you said, I mean, stories are told. They could be better, but it's not. When I think of they're not doing stories, you think they're just sending guys out, and it's just your nuts and bolts kind of. No, they're storylines, they're promos, they're issues that guys and women have with each other. They're just not very compelling. The timing, stuff gets rushed, stuff gets dragged out, whatever it might be. They're just not the best story.
Yeah, I think there's something to it. Darrell, what else do you have for us?
That was it, because, like, I gave them an example. Like, I feel like they be so held up on look, but it's only a special type of person who look get them over, like Nakamura. 8 seconds coming from the back, he was already over. Just his look and his feel got him over. That's a special person. Everybody don't have that look. But if you look at, and if you bring other sports into it, like somebody like Stephen Curry, if you look at him and you didn't know who he was, you wouldn't know that he could. He's the best player in the NBA. But after last year's playoffs, the story that the NBA told with him, and you see how he plays, he's the best player in the NBA. And that's what something that I was feeling like they were missing. Like, yes, they might be telling stories, but they so held up on look and how a person should look and feel to get you over, and leaving it up to our assumptions as fans that we should assume that this person looks like a top-of-the-card guy, this person looked like a mid-carder, that overshadows the story that they should be telling to make you hate or love a person or make you feel like
there's definitely something to that.
In.
They need
like,
to. Yeah, guys are slotted in ways where they can't seem to change, even though the story would be better if they did. I thought Dean Ambrose versus Brock Lesnar was a great example of that. Dean Ambrose was just seen as a guy who's really tough, who takes a beating and loses, and Brock Lesnar's a guy who's really tough and dishes out a beating and wins, and you could have done more with that. The whole psychology of all that was just messed up. I mean, I didn't, you know, the guy who needs the weapon still loses, and we're supposed to cheer him, and the badass who doesn't cheat and takes on the challenge and wins, and we're supposed to boo him or whatever it was we were supposed to do with him. So I thought that was
I wasn't sure what to really make of the Ambrose-Lesnar thing match. It was almost as if you didn't know better, it's like you go, what did Dean do?
Yeah, that crossed my mind. I don't think he did anything, but yeah, it definitely crossed my mind. So yeah, it's kind of...
And then you read the article that he went to them with, like, more stuff, like, hey, let's do this, let's use this, let's do this spot. And they pretty much nixed them all. Like, nope, this is how we're going to lay out this match. And because if anybody can lay out like a hardcore kind of weapons match, it would be CZW original, you know, John Moxley, Dean Ambrose.
Right.
Now, great, I don't think he should pull out a weed whacker or anything and peel a guy's skin off, but I trust him in the realm. He knows, and Lesnar's not going to do anything that's like too much. But under the, just give him like, hey, these are your parameters. We're not going, no blood, no none of that kind of stuff. But yeah, sure, let's try some of your stuff.
Yeah,
I think that would have been fair.
Yeah,
but
let's
no.
go to Mike. Let's go to Mike from Brooklyn. Mike, welcome back to the PW Torch Livecast.
Hey, Bruce, Trav, what's going on?
Saturday night.
Ain't nothing, man. Real quick, progression-wise, like, do they sink or swim, or they keep the, you know, momentum going up? Because the shows wasn't through the roof, but I thought SmackDown was a pretty good show. And I thought Raw, you know, had its moments. Do you think they, you know, keep going with, like, this new direction, you know, with, like, Roman Reigns and all the, you know, the new cats they done brought
I want to watch for 2 or 3 weeks and determine whether it's a new direction or not. I don't think it's going to be any kind of new direction.
I mean, one thing I'll say to add to that, NXT was in Concord, North Carolina that last night. Finn Balor and Nakamura actually teamed up in the main event, and there was a lot of Bullet Club or Balor Club symbolism, and Balor like took the house mic and said, "Where's Carl and
he held up a sign, said, "Where's Carl and Doc?"
Yeah, well, it's Carl and Doc. So, oh, he held up a sign. I heard he said it in the house. That's different.
Maybe he did, but he took a fan sign and held it up. Oh, okay. I saw a thumbnail, a screenshot of that.
Oh, okay. So that would be a little different.
He made the sign himself. But,
I mean, because clearly he's for that. So, yeah, I was kind of thinking they were, was he going into business for himself, or was they, or are they planting the seeds for that? Are they foreshadowing that, or something like that? So, I'm with you, though. I want to just watch for the next few weeks and see where the direction goes.
Yeah, as far as we talked earlier, I want to make this point about their storytelling. So many times in the lab, we talk about it on East Coast Cast all the time. How many major storylines or major developments in the last two or three years, especially, where here we are as fans and analysts talking about a show, an angle, just an overall whatever, and we're putting our storyline spin on it because it hasn't been, the story hasn't been completely told or fleshed out. So
Wait a minute. I'm having an ESP flash. Travis Bryant, Todd Martin. Okay, it's finished now. All right, go ahead.
So you're adding in your own motivation. He did this to them because they're not expressly saying. So I think a certain thing, like this guy's mad at him for X or whatever. They don't expressly say it. They leave it up to you to kind of fill in your own storyline. And when it comes to getting, they do everything, or they do a lot of things for a casual or a more casual audience, but then they don't do the thing that a casual audience needs. A casual audience can't do that. What I just said. Oh, well, this is his motivation, and this is why he attacked him. This is why he didn't attack him or didn't come to the rescue or whatever the storyline interjection or motivation that you're adding in, because they don't know. It just, I just flipped it on. I was watching Monday Night Football, thought I'd see what was happening on Raw. I don't know what the hell's going on, because they're assuming. They do this all the time. They bring a guy up. They assume the entire audience knows who he is, instead of just tell us who he is, or tell us who she is.
Oh,
tell us what they're about.
That's true. They do skip chapters. Yeah, you've got to.
But how
introduce
if you're frustrating your most ardent audience, how do you expect a guy that watches every 8 weeks, every 12 weeks, every 24 weeks? You know, once a year, Mania season, he maybe tunes in. How can they jump in and get invested if things aren't explained? If they can't even figure out why wrestler X is mad at wrestler Y?
Yeah, I do
why
think the last 25
Japan, why
years
did the
wrestling's been
do
too
that?
Complicated. Yeah, I think it's been too complicated. I think they're missing chapters, they're missing missing a ton of details, and they go by too fast, and they're not paced right, and then they're just too complicated. It's like it's a story
thing,
of a fight. Yeah.
Just a simple thing with the Corbin debut on Raw with why would you – I think Todd Martin brought it up. Like, why would you have him hit his move on the floor the first time people see it?
That's exactly right.
Right, like have him – do it in the ring, and people go, oh, what, that move is sick. And, you know, get that idea, get the move over. Wow, because it's a really impressive move. And then when he hits it on the floor in 6 weeks or even next week, I mean, they're crying out loud. They with that Dolph Ziggler thing, they just condensed a month's worth of possibilities into one 12-minute match. And
you know, you think they would do the opposite.
Right.
They've got 3 hours to fill. Like, if you decompressed everything and did what you're talking about, then you'd have a logical progression that the show would go better. The show would be less.
Corbin's has no reason to hate Dolph Ziggler enough to do that to him.
That's a point, too.
None.
Yeah.
Oh, and you just met that ref. Why is that? Oh, it's on your hand. Like, in the moment, I thought, wow, that's a good line. He's like, you know, but it just, once you think about it for 2 seconds, it's like, this doesn't, first day in, he's just got that big a chip on his shoulder. Like, nobody did anything to him to make him so pissy. So, they just cram a lot in, or they, like you said, miss stuff or skip chapters. So it's frustrating as trying to follow the story, and I just can't imagine a casual fan or just a less ardent fan or a completely new fan trying, hey, a bunch of my friends talked about WrestleMania. Let me see. I'm going to give them April, and I'll watch. I just can't imagine that they hang in there and go, yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's go to our friend Kylan from New Jersey. Kylan, welcome back to the PW Torch Livecast.
Thank you, Bruce. How are you and Travis this week?
What's up, man? What's on your mind?
Not much.
Not much? It was WrestleMania week.
What was that, Bruce?
I said, how could there not be much on your mind? I mean, we just got through WrestleMania. I mean, all our questions were answered. All our, and new questions were posed on Monday night. So I would figure you'd have a lot.
Yeah, WrestleMania sure was quite disappointing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was low. It sounds like I was lower on it than Travis was. I was closer to you, Kylan. But yeah, I felt like it was a step down from the last several WrestleManias.
A huge one.
Yeah. Even last year's, which wasn't all that great.
Yeah, that's how I saw it too, definitely.
My question for this week is on the future storyline. Future angles and an alleged source for WWE who posts information under the name of Falcon Arrow is reporting that the Authority will soon be taking an extended hiatus. How soon, if this is even true, do you and Travis foresee this happening?
Can't say that I have heard that. And you know, obviously they weren't on Monday Night Raw. The thing to me about that is I would hope that the Authority would be beaten in some sort of big match that on a Sunday night that would involve somebody heroically, you know, shoving them out the door. Not that they just go, okay, they're not there, they're not going to be here, and now we've got a new general manager and they're a heel, or we've got a new general manager and they're a babyface, and there's not much explanation for it. I think that they've built that act up as this top. You know, it's the top heel act in the company for several years, and they have sacrificed a lot of people's heat to do that. So someone should benefit from beating them, from like beating them once and for all, and getting them out of power as far as television storylines go. And that's just I just think that there's a lot of network subscriptions. There's a lot of money in doing that, and it's just a waste not to. I don't the only reason I can think not to is the egos of the McMahon family, the egos of Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, but as substantial as they are, I think that the overriding idea that you could, you know, that you had the soap opera finally end in a big climatic showdown would supersede that. Travis, what do you think of that possibility?
I do forget that was a bit of a downer moment when the three count happened. People kind of looked around like, oh, so, I just was certain the Authority, like, oh, this is it. It makes sense. Big match, big stipulation. The Authority's done. and then Triple H goes on and loses the title, and I was surprised I didn't hear Stephanie in her promo on Monday, or Stephanie or Triple H, say that in their promo. Like, I don't care whatever happens to Shane, and if he ends the Authority, well, I'm still the Authority because I'm going to beat Roman Reigns and still have a stranglehold on his championship. I thought that would have really gone over well, but he didn't. But when Taker beat him, people weren't mad that Taker won, but they were just like, oh, I thought this was our chance.
Yeah.
You know, kind of how, how we're going to feel in July, if and when, Hillary gets denied, like, this was our chance, like, to just blow everything up, kick the bums out, like, in a real way, not just some, talking, oh, yeah, really get somebody in there who would really, like, not take any crap and speak on things in a truthful manner. It was a bit of a downer. People did kind of look around at each other like, oh, well.
Yeah, I think that you have to have somebody go. I think you have to have somebody go that has, for all his faults, he had a ton of them, but has some of the appeal of Shane McMahon, who goes, I'm running, and it doesn't have to be Shane McMahon, Roman Reigns, but Roman Reigns with some people going, I'm running you guys out of here. Like, enough is enough. And then spend a storyline through pay-per-views about 5 or 6 months that ends up to a dramatic showdown. You go or I go, and the good guys win, and they're out. And it still would be hurt by the fact that they did this and then brought them back in 6 weeks. I mean, it's like, this time you'd have to just pretty much say they're not coming back. If they lose, they're not coming back, and whichever side is that they're not coming back. And then, then Triple H really ought to segue in a year or so into the grand old man and play the NXT, play NXT commission.
Huh? He wouldn't even have to wait that long, for real. Why don't former top stars, like the way Rock did that Instagram when he's like, at WrestleMania 13, I got booed out the building and blah. That was clearly, just no doubt in anybody's mind, that was a message to Roman Reigns, to and for Roman Reigns specifically.
Right, sure.
Why isn't a Rock or an Austin, these guys that have nothing to lose, they have all the power in the world, especially the Rock, why doesn't he? It doesn't have to be public, and if it's private, then I guess I obviously wouldn't know about it. But I seriously doubt in any strong way. Why aren't they calling management out for making the wrestlers look like pussies? Excuse me, but that's exactly what they do. Everybody, from Dean Ambrose to Brock Lesnar, indirectly with Brock, because they wouldn't even want to, they don't want to piss him off, even kayfabe. Like, but why aren't any of the top guys that have some power and have a platform go, this is ridiculous. No one's ever going to get over if you're constantly emasculating tough guy wrestlers.
I think there's some private feelings that definitely agree with that.
Private. Make that shit public, man. You got to yell at you got, like with the whole fire vents 4 months ago that I was like, it's all. You have to embarrass these types of people. You have to embarrass them. Like if people didn't boo Roman Reigns and everybody turned their backs on the match, that would have embarrassed them.
That's all true,
it's tough to get
dissatisfaction is not to that level. Or I'll put it like this: the fury at seeing something done wrong isn't enough to call that out publicly and risk the advantages.
If you're wrong, what are you risking? What are you
if you're Rock, you don't get to play wrestler. You don't get to play wrestler at WrestleMania.
Oh, right. Because how many more times? Like, I don't want to hear. I love having his mom and those guys in the front row so he can hug them after. Okay, you've done that. They get it. They've seen you wrestle a million times. Like, you have nothing to lose and everything to gain.
True,
as far as
that's all true. Yeah. But except for the ego boost, and except for. you know, a substantial chunk of change too for one night of doing something, of half-assing your way through something that you know how to do, you know, from the back of your hand. And that, you know, that's, I think that's definitely part of it. Let's go to our traditional call from Australia. Jason, how you doing?
Yeah, hey guys, how you guys going? Look, I just want to get straight into it. I've got a few things I'd like to touch on, but you know, that disclaimer that for Monday Night Raw, that was one of the most embarrassing things that I've ever seen WWE do. Like when I saw Cole and Saxton and JBL said that, I literally said out loud, "Oh, for F's sakes, just get out of my face with that." Like you know what I mean? They're apologizing to their new cool non wrestling fans as if to say, well, these people here tonight, they don't really represent us, you know, don't listen to them.
But
oh, for crying out loud, you know.
But
that
that's
embarrassing
for if I turn something on and I'm new and that happens, I go, I'm questioning if I want to continue. Like, what? This is, like if I turn a new show on or a new series or get into a new league or sport, and no one's ever going to condescend or pander. I don't know what the hell it was. What you would classify that as to their audience like that? It's just that self-hating. You know, we tell terrible stories, and our people that we want to be over isn't over. So here's a lame excuse, because it's not like, and Wade had said it all week, it's not like when Sheamus came out, they cheered, or when Shane came out, they booed. It still did what they did. It was a very normal night. There was nothing bizarro or anything.
Here's a funny thing about that. If you're a non-wrestling fan and you're tuning in for the first time and you bought what they said, you're going to think that the New Day are not popular. You're going to think that Enzo and Kaz, well, they're bad guys. You're going to think AJ Styles a bad guy, but you're going to think Chris Jericho's a good guy. You're going to think the Dudley Boys are a good guy. It's like if you actually listen to them, it throws the whole thing out of whack.
Yeah, I think it was Vince McMahon's insecurity. I mean, yeah, I just thought it made it more pronounced. Even if, and I know that I'm sure they didn't say that to the live crowd, but I also just thought I was watching more for it after that, and I knew it was going to be weird, but I was just like, oh man, they must be out of control, something must have happened, or you know, you're sitting there and they were weird, but still you play through. I mean, how hard is that? You just play through. I mean, it's like you know the deal. And it's also that we'll pat them on the head. You know, we'll pat them on the head. Aren't they, you know, aren't they special? And I don't think you do that with paying customers.
Hey, Bruce, you're exactly right. You don't do that with paying customers. They're the ones that are spending all that money on your product. They're flying all around the world. They've probably been fans that have been with you for 10 or 15 years, and you're sort of looking down at your existing customers, and that's in any business, that's a bad thing to do. But here's the other thing, right? I really didn't like that Shane McMahon Undertaker match. Like, I didn't pay my money to see a 46-year-old guy almost kill himself. Like, just because these guys can't tell a good story.
That's exactly what you pay your money for.
He's right. I wrote what you wrote, Jason. I mean, I agree with you, and I wrote about it this week. But I'm also kind of like, that's exactly what they told you was going to happen, and you paid your money. To see that ridiculous. And I thought that one was even more ridiculous than the Mick Foley one. At least Mick Foley got, you know, he's like fighting on the cage, and the Undertaker tossed him off the cage. He didn't have a prone opponent down on the floor and then climb the cage, look around, make all kinds of signals to himself and to, you know, to up above, and then finally jump off the cage, and lo and behold, the guy got out of the way. I mean, it was just, you know, no one. I should ask you this, Travis. Did anybody care that he missed hitting Undertaker?
No.
No one cared.
It had nothing to do with anything. It was just the spectacle of a guy, you know, putting his body and well-being on the line. And he hit. And just to say, he hit that as perfectly as you're going to hit, as you could hit that. Like, someone complained, like, he just fell. He didn't jump.
Seriously.
Are you kidding me?
That's hilarious.
Hey, that's the type of guy you should go to and say, oh, geez, aren't you special? That's what you should say to that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a stupid comment. But, Bruce, you know, what really upset me about that stunt, now, my apologies, I haven't read your article, but let me ask you this. What happens if he misses and the worst happens?
Then it's a disaster.
But Jason, he doesn't have to miss. I mean, that would have been really hard to do considering how things were positioned and where everything was. All he has to do is hit his elbow on the edge and not fall perfectly in the middle like he did. Just have an arm or you know, hit that elbow. He tears his elbow up or he destroys his shoulder or something like that. If he hits like Vince hit when he fell off the cage 15 years ago, say 20 years ago in that cage match, and he's climbing up the side and thinks somebody slammed his head into the thing and he took a butt
right
off the announce table, but he hit the edge. If he does something like that, he doesn't have to miss for that thing to go horribly, horribly wrong. But if he missed,
exactly,
that's even, I mean, the splat and thud of a 22 or whatever foot drop is, yes. But, again, just because of how things were set up, it would have been tough to miss. But a miss isn't necessary for things to just be awful.
Yeah. You know,
and
yeah,
that's
yeah,
the story
right
for the next month. And no one's talking about Mania. It's Shane's in traction.
Correct. Yeah. Now, you know, what I found funny is that, you know, when Vince comes out, the same fans which are online calling for him to be removed from creative and he's lost his touch, they're the same fans that still kiss his ass when he comes out there. They're bowing to him, they're cheering. I just find it to be very funny. But you know what I really liked about Raw, guys? And you sort of half touched on it. And I wrote this to Wade on Twitter, and it got some good feedback. I said, how much pleasant Raw was to watch without the dark, lingering cloud of the authority. You know, you think about, you go outside and you want to commit to a nice day, and you know, you want to go for a bike ride or go for a walk, but you see some clouds in the foreground and you think to yourself, you know what, I'm not so sure I can commit to this day because it might start raining. But I was able to commit to Raw because I didn't see those dark clouds, and it was much more pleasant. And I thought the whole show just seemed much more happier without the dark cloud of the authority. And I don't care if they don't pay it off. Just get rid of them. Because I've said for a while that 80% of their problems derive from the authority.
Well, I mean, it would be an improvement. I just think there's a money-making opportunity there. And also there's some star-making of the ones who cut off everybody's, you know, testicles finally get beaten by somebody with some testicles. I think that's something important to do. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, if it just stopped doing it, it'd be a relief. There's no doubt about that. There was a different tone to the show Monday night because of that. Although I did very much love Shane McMahon. He's going to change it all. He's got his chance to run Monday Night Raw, and the show goes on just like you think it normally would, and the only decision he makes is, okay, you four guys can wrestle at the end of the show for for the number one contendership. I swear, I just, what I wanted him to say was, all right, come back out right after and go, okay, show's over at 10 o'clock. Tell the USA,
yeah,
oh, that's the first thing I'm doing. Show's over at 10 o'clock. You and you out. So that's, you know.
Oh, that, Bruce, that would have been great. He would have been the greatest babyface of all time. That would have been awesome. You know, the other thing I wanted to bring up, I thought Darrell made a really good point about the stories. I mean, and then you guys touched on it. I mean, that's been a bugbear of mine for a while. Now, I think it's the incomplete stories. It's the unnecessary, like, red herrings that they throw out that you think they might follow up on that would actually add to the story, but they don't. I mean, this has been like this for a while. But, you know, I was thinking a guy like Apollo Crews, to me, they really have to do something with him early, or I feel like he's going to get lost in the shuffle, sort of like Neville. You know, Bruce and Travis, you know, I read these house show results, and as far as I'm concerned, I never see, like, main event tag teams. Like, for me, as soon as John Cena comes back into the fold, I would have him immediately team up with Apollo Crews and just do a house show loop with Crews and Cena teaming up against, say, Baron Corbin and Kevin Owens, for example. So, like, Apollo Crews, people are used to seeing his name next to John Cena, and it's a house show, and he's getting something out of it. So you know what I mean? Because when I was growing up, I remember watching Survivor Series 92, and I knew nothing about Razor Ramon. But he was only in the Federation for about 3 months. But I remember him and Flair cut a promo, and Gene Oakland was saying, geez, talk about a dream team here. And Flair was putting over Ramon. And I said to myself, you know what? This guy must be important if he's teaming with Flair. So you could tell that story with Cruz, do a house show loop with him and Cena teaming up. And the great thing is, ideally, Cena's taking less bumps. Why couldn't you get more guys over in that way?
It was done all the time. I was watching wrestling for a long time. I've seen it done a lot of times. But everybody has their slot, and you don't start. You know, I think that. I mean, I can remember Sweet Ebony Diamond, Rocky Johnson, The Rock's father, and never having seen him before. And Ric Flair came out and said, "I have this friend from St. Louis who's going to kick ass." I mean, he didn't say kick ass, but he did it. And they teamed him up with Ric Flair from the beginning, and you knew he was important, and he was, you know, he was a main eventer, and that was instead of starting at a certain point and then having to rise. It's you know, every once in a while, I think that they definitely should use that. They should definitely you know, John Cena needs help, so he brings in someone new from NXT, you know, or along those lines, and that's part of it. So appreciate the phone call, Jason. As always, always a strong finish to the show. And Travis, good work.
Yeah, actually, Bruce wanted your reaction live to that thing.
Oh, okay.
You just the most benign response, like, oh, okay.
Now, what do you want? It's an audio show. Guys texted me, and of course it's a meme, but yeah, it was good. I mean, I was laughing, but
okay.
But no, that was my first honest reaction to the first picture. It's like that was
more
right,
of course.
Yeah, so you know, God bless her wherever she is right at this moment. So hopefully, looks that good still. Anyway, Travis, appreciate the stuff. Don't forget to listen to tomorrow. God, who is Jim having on? Jim Valley with Saturday Wrestling Show. Folks like B. Brian Blair, and there'll be some talk about Blackjack Mulligan, and there'll be some talk on the first hour of the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show about Blackjack Mulligan, which Wade Keller started the show with. Let's talk about the post-WrestleMania Raw, and I said, no, let's talk about Blackjack Mulligan. So hopefully people will enjoy that. I know I enjoyed talking about him. Rest in peace. And anyway, thank everybody for listening. Thank all the callers, and thank all the downloaders, and we will be back soon.